Okay, I'll talk about the bees, and then I'll cover the properties that, and small overlap with what McKayla's just showed. So just to remind you that at HCP, we updated four of these five central channels. And I'll talk about the bee, both in standard model, TTH, VH, and NSSA.
I buy one.
Sure.
I mean, the numbers we just saw seem to suggest that we're better than 1% resolution for the ZZ for that.
Well, depending on where you are in the detector, it's 1 to 2%.
I mean, who's probing errors of 0.6 plus or minus and 0.2?
For what?
For the, that ZZ measurement.
But well, that's the aggregate uncertainty, statistical uncertainty on the mass with all of the events. This is per event.
Oh, that's per event.
Yeah. I mean, well,
I see.
How to say it? It's the average that you would expect to get if you pull the random event.
But the interesting number is what the ultimate.
Yeah, which is 0.6 over 126. So that's what the full statistics we have.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start with the main channel in BB bar, which is VH. And as you know the story here, that why can't we do inclusive HCV? It's because we have 9 orders of magnitude between QCD and the Higgs type cross sections you would expect to get. So it's 9 orders of magnitude. You can actually get back 6 orders of magnitude from analysis techniques, but it's that last 3 that kill you. And it's saved by the MSSM because you get 2 orders of magnitude for free from the cross section, so you're back in the game. So that explains that. And so for here, we need another haystack. And as you all know, 4 years ago, VH came to the rescue from this paper. And the idea here was that, first of all, just asking for a vector boson kills a lot of QCD. It also provides you an efficient trigger, even in the invisible mode. And then if you boost on top of that, you kill more of the QCD. Depending on how far you boost, you can kill all of the QCD. And you even suppress the main other backgrounds, B plus jets, because the PT spectrum is softer. It also allows you, if you boost, you can then reconstruct the Z to 2 neutrinos because they're moving in the same direction. So the net adds up. And so it's just a win. And then, but the main effort of this paper was to show off this substructure technique here from a theoretical point of view. But from the experimental point of view, when I saw this paper, I immediately jumped on this in CMS. And one question we had was whether we need to use this substructure technique or not. But before you go there, first, just to compare the LHC to the Tevatron, because the Tevatron was doing this channel for a long time, right, as we know. If you look at the signal and compare ATE to 2TE, you see the gain there. It's about a factor 5. But the background, because of the glue, as everybody knows, goes up through the roof, the background actually goes up by a factor 20. So it's not obvious a priori that this channel will work at the LHC in VH production, except that with the added events there, you get a cross-section to burn, and that's another reason to boost. So you want to boost to get rid of background anyway, and they can't boost the Tevatron too much because there's not a lot of cross-section there. So the cross-section buys us the PT boost, and then the only question is whether you need, how do you reconstruct the Higgs using substructure or no substructure? And the boost argument, again, shown here, this is the PT of the vector boson for the various types of events, including signal. And TT bar doesn't help, right, because the TT bar gives a high boost anyway to the dye V-jet system. But for the W plus jets, either light or heavy flavor, it has a steeper PT spectrum, so you win when you boost. However, it turns out that at ATEV, and I'm guessing even at higher energy, the optimal boost is not above 200 GeV, it's lower than that. In WH, it's more like 150 to 170. And if you look at how far apart they are, the two B quarks, this is delta R of the BB bar pair at the generator level, you can't see over here, but it's point, for the jets we use, which has a size parameter of 0.5, you only start to merge above 400 GeV. So if your optimal kinematic point is 150, you're far from the merging point, and you don't need this technique to reconstruct the Higgs. And then the question is whether it helps anyway, because there's a background argument here too, that it helps to suppress the background by looking inside the fat jet. And we just haven't seen that yet. It's a sort of a wash at this point, either way you do the analysis. So we kept from the beginning, back 2 years ago, to do the simple dye jet analysis while continuing to study the fat jet analysis. So this will come eventually, maybe even next year. But the real question for me is whether at 13 TeV this argument flips, whether you get more PT separation between signal and background. I wouldn't expect much. And then you can boost even higher, and then this technique comes, this substructure technique comes in. handy a little bit more, and then it might have a big benefit at the higher energy. So that's a question yet to see. Okay, but at ATEV, we use all these channels, and we reconstruct the Higgs, as I said, with standard anti-KT jets with a size of 0.5. The triggers are what you would expect for the charged leptons, and for the MET, we use AGV threshold and an asymmetric cut on two extra jets and some topology cuts to remove the QCD. The B-tagging, we do loose B-tagging on each jet of the Higgs candidate, and then we throw the discriminator into a multivariate technique to get further separation out. And then, new for Aicha, we had employed what has been employed at CBF for a while, which is a regression technique to improve the mass resolution. I'll show that. So we boost, and then we use topology discriminants, and in fact also a little bit of color flow, although it doesn't add much. So the topology is obvious, the angle between the vector boson and the Higgs, the 2D angle, the 3D angle, and 2D angle in the other direction, and then that's between the jets, actually. And then the number of jets in the event, which helps for TT bar, and then the color connection between the jets and the beam, basically. Then we cook up some control regions where we expect to have pure or nearly pure samples of particular backgrounds, top W plus jets, V plus, or Z plus jets. And then we use those samples to check the simulation against the data, and then adjust the cross-section that we see. And then those are the starting parameters for the final fit, which then allows those to vary. So the final analysis is then to throw everything we know, all of this stuff, into a multivariate technique and then fit that shape for signal versus all of the backgrounds that we expect in bins of PT of the vector boson, and then in some channels also bins of B-tagging, so you have better or worse B-tagging quality. And then as a cross-check to all of this, to keep people sort of calm on the multivariate technique that we use, we just look at the diject mass and with a very loosely optimized selection and check what we see to see if it's consistent. So that's the second in parallel analysis. We have to do that to check for the diag boson production, which we know has to be there. Okay, so an event, and this also reinforces the point about whether using substructure or not is needed. This is a case with high MET on one side, recoiling off of two jets here, and you can see the separation between those two jets clearly in the event display for a PT of 250 of the digest system. So you just see by eye, you don't need to call this a fat jet and look inside. I can see two jets right there. So this mass was 120, good candidate. And the MET was balancing the PT of the jets. It's 240. So the B-tagging is obviously critical here, and we validate it in the data. The performance is shown here for fake rate, efficiency of the fakes, and then B-jet efficiency. These are different algorithms that are used in CMS. We use the one at the bottom, the black curve here. So our working point nominally for the loose selection there is 70% efficiency and 1%, or so 1 to 2% fake rate. We check this in TT bar events for single jets up to and above 600 GeV. And we check the simulation against the data to see if the simulation is right. We get correction factors that are between 90 and 100%. And we use this shape. So for a given jet, given PT, you know the correction factor to apply to that jet, and we do that on an event-by-event basis and a jet-by-jet basis and to correct the simulation that we use. And then we do the same for the fake rate. So this is signal efficiency, and this is background efficiency. And we apply this shape also to the background. So we don't just use the simulation, we use simulation corrected to the data, which means we're effectively using the data. Okay, and with appropriate shape uncertainties that are propagated to the final BDT. Okay, so the resolution of the mass is critical. Okay, B-tagging is critical to help suppress the background, identify the signal sample, and then the B-jet energy resolution affects the mass resolution that you get in the end. We start with a resolution of about 10% out of the box. So for 125 GeV Higgs, you're talking about 12, 13 GeV resolution. And then we aim to improve that, and we use information about the jets, their raw energy, their corrected energy, where they are in the detector, and so forth. And then in addition to that, also B-jet characteristics, so the lifetime information to tell you that it is a B-jet, whether there is a lepton in the event, in the jet or not, a soft lepton, so that tells you it's more likely to be a B-jet. Plus it tells you you have a neutrino, one, at least one. So you add all this information together, and you don't just improve the sort of generic jet energy calibration, but specifically the B-jet energy calibration. So this is effectively cooking up a B-jet energy calibration. And you can see the improvement that you get here in the case where you do have a soft left on in the jet. You get 10 to 20% improvement depending on the channel. And the before is the red here and the blue is the after. So you improve not only the resolution, the width here, but you can see that the mask gets closer to the input mask, which is 125 in this case. So better resolution and better scale at the same time. We checked this. This is signal Monte Carlo, so you could ask whether this is real or not, or we're just faking it, fooling ourselves. So we go to the data and we look for Z on one side, decaying the two muons, the two red lines there, and recoiling off of two jets, so it looks just like a signal, where the two jets are V-tagged, so they are V-jets. And you ask that this PT balances the ZPT, and then you take the ratio of those two PTs, you should get one. And if you can see the plot, you can see that the blue is narrower, and again, it shifts up as you expect. So, and in fact, we find that we get the same improvement, both in the scale and in the resolution that we in the data that we get in the simulation for a completely different physics process. So that gives us high confidence that what we're seeing in the simulation is actually real improvement, not fake. We also look at the top mass in TT bar events and in single top events, and we see the same. Okay, so then we go to the control regions, as I said, and isolate vector boson plus heavy, vector boson plus light with charm, TT bar, single top, di boson. With the last two, we don't have separate control regions for. Di boson, we have the final signal region, which we use to check. I'll show that. For single top, it's tough. You can try to isolate a single top sample, but it looks very much like W plus B, and it looks very much like signal. So there's a mix here of vector boson plus jets, single top, and even to an extent TT bar, where you lose some jets, where they really look just like signal. But you do the best you can. You enhance the backgrounds one by one, and then you get these so-called scale factors for V plus heavy, V plus light, and top. And then you can check, this is just one example, the MET in the W plus heavy flavor sample. And the data is the points, looks pretty good. This is with the scale factors applied. And then, so you get starting values, and then you plug that into the fit, and then you let everything vary in the fit. And then you check that the yields that you get at the end for the final fit are actually consistent with what you put in. And if they weren't, you'd have to ask why. But they are, and so everything sort of hangs together in this strategy. Okay, so I mentioned the diejet mass as a cross-check. So you sum up all of the channels together, and basically loosely optimize selection. It's the selection we actually optimized a year ago at Lepton Photon, and we put that aside because we started using the BDT, and we just left it there. But it was an optimized simulation in July of 2011. So it's still reasonably good, and you see the data there and all of the backgrounds stacked up. If you subtract that background, then you get this plot. And so you start to see that in the region occupied by the known process of standard model di boson plus the assumed or the searched for excess on the right-hand side, the Higgs, which would be in the red there, you see an excess there that's clear. And then the question we have going forward is, can we separate this bump here into two separate peaks? But it's clear that we have an excess there. It's almost 4 sigma. It's actually a little bit above 4 sigma for di boson. And then again, you're looking for a shoulder on top of that. Okay, so that's the cross-check. So we don't look at this first, we look at this at the end, but I just wanted to show that, to show what it looks like. What we really do is then this multivariate technique, we use the boosted decision tree, combine a lot of variables together, they're all there, in case you want to ask about any one of them. And then we check the shape that we get in the out of this, training on signal against background, and then we apply it to these control regions where we have, for example, in this case, above 90% TT bar, the blue is TT bar. And then you ask if the shape you get out matches what you expect, and it does. The BDT shape looks pretty good. So this gives us confidence that this technique that's trying to get the most out of the data is actually not screwing things up, but gives back reasonable results. Then you do it in the signal region for two examples here, Z to invisible and Z to mu mu. The red here is the shape that you expect for the signal. So to the right is more signal-like, to the left more background-like. And the background's mixed. Like out here, it's mostly TT bar. This is single top, this is di boson. So this separation you see between the red here and this big gray blob is basically the mass. That's the only thing that separates di boson from signal. And this VDT, in fact, if you plotted it versus the mass, in this region, it would be a line. Right, it's almost one-to-one correlation between the mass. And you see the red right there starting to peak up a little bit. In the last bin to the right, we're about 3-to-1 background to signal. Okay, but at least you can start to see it on the plot. Okay, so the systematics, B tagging is dominant in terms of efficiencies and things like that. But the real uncertainties come from theory and then estimates of the backgrounds that we don't get from the data, for example, single top and bosons. And these will be measured. These are being measured at the LHC, both CMS and Atlas. So these uncertainties, which we tag now at 15 to 30%, will go down with luminosity in the next run. So they are not they're not a floor to the systematic. They are also statistically, they will eventually be statistical. Okay, and this theory uncertainty comes from the expected shape of the PT spectrum that we cut on. So we're boosting and cutting on that. And we put in 5 to 10%, both for electroweak and QCD calculations. Okay, you put all of that together and you get this final limit plot as a function of the mass in the relevant region. The black here is the expected limit. So we are at standard model sensitivity below 120. The red line is the what you would expect to see on average for a 125 GeV Higgs standard model signal, that red one there. And the black is what you observe as the limit. So if you had signal, you get a higher limit than you expect to get with no signal, and it mostly follows that red line. It turned into a p-value. The observed is the blue line here, and it crosses the expected almost right at 125, coincidentally. And so we expect to get 2.1 sigma signal, and we see 2.2 sigma signal. So we're seeing data almost exactly as we expect to see it if there is a standard model Higgs. Of course, it doesn't exclude the possibility that there is nothing there. It's just a fluctuation. All of the three main channels line up in terms of the mu value, the signal strength, and the average signal strength, or the combined, is 1.3 plus or minus 0.7. Okay. So starting to see, and it's been growing gradually and consistently with the data, so we're just starting to see the data coming, creeping up. Okay, the other channel that is active right now, we're also looking at VBF. It will come. VBF with H2BB will come, hopefully as early as we can next year. But we already have TTH on the 2011 data set, which was shown at IHF. We're working on an update.
So there's no VBF contamination to the VH results?
Let's see. That's a good question.
Is not higher.
We count jets across the whole range, so they would show up in additional jet bins, in fact. Mm-hmm. But that would be swamped by TTH. We don't do anything to get rid of it, and I wouldn't expect that it's there. No, I can't. The trigger would kill it. Actually, sorry.
Okay, well,
there's no left on.
Kill most of it.
Yeah.
Kill all of it.
There can't be any VBF in that sample.
There's no left on for missing ET events.
Yeah, no, the trigger would kill those events. See, in this sample, you're not going to get that. Okay, so TTH, lots of particles in the final state. It's an important channel, everybody knows why. It's doubly sensitive to fermions, top in the production, bottom in the decay. There's no connection then to the vector boson, so it's a completely isolated system to study the fermion couplings. It's busy experimentally. There are at least four B jets plus four of either jets and or leptons in the final state. The issues are that the mass is not an effective discriminating variable because when the W's decay to jets, as you have here, either two or four, then you have combinatorics also between the B jets of the top quark and of this signal you're trying to isolate. So the combinatoric here is a nightmare, and it means that the mass is washed out, the signal shape is washed out. Now that's sort of hand-wavingly true, but the question is whether we can actually, both CMS and Atlas, improve on that. I think Atlas actually does use the mass. But we actually completely ignore it, in fact. The critical input is the background from the standard model process TT bar plus BB bar, which is a hot topic right now. Nearly indistinguishable from the signal, same final state and similar kinematics. So that's a tough one. So this is effectively a counting experiment in the end. I don't know if the authors would agree with that statement, but I say this because the sensitivity comes from separating the events into the number of jets and the number of B jets. So there are categories of events which are quantized and separate, independent, and then within each category you do a fit to find the signal in the background. But effectively most of the sensitivity is coming from the separation of the events into jet bins and B jet bins. Then you do the usual top type analysis where you have lepton plus jets and dileptons, and that's separately. So I won't go into the details of the selection, but just to show you the data Monte Carlo agreement in the next two slides. So for the background, if you look in a region that has low jet multiplicity, like two jets, and well, greater than or equal to two jets, so I guess up to two jets, B jets here, and in the lepton plus jets in the dilepton, you get almost pure TT bar. In the end, the red is the TT bar here. And the distribution within the uncertainties, the hash there is the uncertainty on the expectation. So within the uncertainties on the expectation, you get the shape, right? The signal multiplied by 0.4 times 4,811 is this. And for dilepton, you get more electroweak coming in, of course, with W plus jets. All right, but the shapes are more or less understood in this background dominated region. If you go to more towards the signal region, that would be higher number of jets, so say n jet equal 5, and then asking for 4 or more B tags, or greater than 6 jets, 4 or more B tags. So these are the highest multiplicity bins and the highest B jet multiplicity bins where the signal is dominant. You see the signal now multiplied by only 1.2 times 26 and 1.7 times 23 there. And that's to normalize the area. And then the data is the points with the error bars there. And you see the background purple is TT bar plus BB bar. So that's the one that really matters in the signal region. TT bar is very well known. We can calibrate it in regions where it's basically 100% top. So not really a problem in terms of understanding what's going on there. It's more of the PDF uncertainties and the theoretical uncertainties on the jet spectrum, the multiplicity. But this purple here is where the theory could help. And again, it's hard to distinguish it from the signal in both of these two bins here. But this is where the most of the sensitivity comes from, and it's not too far off from VH. This is with only 5 inverse femto bonds, so a factor of roughly 3 less than what we have in VH. And we're at 125, we're at sort of 4.5 expected time to stand alone. The lepton plus jets is a little bit lower than expected. The dilepton is a little bit higher than expected, but the lepton plus jets dominates, so the combination is lower than expected. And this does have an effect on the overall combination. I'll point that out when I show those plots. Okay, got that. Moving on beyond the standard model. I don't have to go through the intro here, but I'll just say that at CMS, we have searched in neutral MSSM Higgs particles in tau tau and now in BV as of this year. And in charge, we look in top decays mostly. Although we're also starting to look for heavy charged Higgs decaying the top. Okay, as I said, you get the boost in the cross section. So you can look for an all hadronic final state, and it's not so horrible because you get that 2 orders of magnitude boost in the production cross section. So MSSM decaying to BB bar, we produce it in a convenient way for the trigger. If you just had the two Bs, it would be still very top. So either one B or two Bs in association with the two from the Higgs object. And so it's all hadronic final state, up to either 3 or 4 B jets, plus some radiation. And it's really one of the most challenging, if not the most challenging triggers at the LHC. We tackled this last year. That was the main work of last year, preparing for this analysis, was to get these triggers in. We took two strategies, all hadronic, where you really cut tight on B tagging at the trigger level, and then semileptonic, where you use the muon to get the trigger for you, and then you are looser on the rest of the cuts that you need to beat the trigger rate down. Okay, and because we followed this two-pronged approach, we found in the end that the events that come in on this trigger are almost completely independent of the events that come in on the semileptonic trigger. There's only about a 2-3% overlap, so we basically double the sample almost for free. Well, for double the work, you get double the reward. So just a picture of what this looks like for the all-hadronic analysis. It's sort of the classic thing you see for a search in the hadron, dihadron, peak, right? You're looking for a peak on top on this huge background. And it would show up as a sliver sort of over here. Right? So this is background only region, and you get a shape from that, and then in a double tag sample, and then you apply the third tag, and you use the shape you get in the double tag as a template, and that's what you get in the bottom right here. The red here is what the expected signal would be for a 200 GeV MSSM Higgs. So you're looking for that little sliver in two bins on top of that huge. But you see it's 20 to 1, so it's not 1,000 to 1, it's 20 to 1. Mm-hmm. Much, much better. All right, semileptonic analysis, so that was the all-hadronic. This one uses a muon in the trigger, and so it has a semileptonic decay of one of the B jets, typically from the Higgs. But more or less the same game. There's a huge peak from QCD background. You're looking for a sliver on top of that. And if you look over here, the signal down here for two different masses, 120, 180, what it would look like. And again, it's sort of 1 to 20 signal in the background. But the shapes are well modeled by these control. You look in control regions with two tags, and then you go to three tags, and everything seems to work. So this is promising for the future. We can just add more data to what we have. We have the triggers in place, had them in place in 2012. So these limits will improve. This is for the cross-section times branching fraction over here versus mass, and then the tan beta versus mass on the right-hand side. So the tau-tau channel is down here now at 5, and then up to, say, 200 or something, and then it goes up. But this is actually not so bad. It's only about a factor of 2 higher limits. And it's complementary, of course.
Like there was something on the last line in the
semi-platonic.
Here?
Yeah. You mean the whole thing here?
No, around 180, there's an
XA.
That didn't seem
this
to go up on the limits.
Wait, this?
Well, draw a circle around that in the next 5. Yeah, there you go.
The resolution's not. It's too narrow to be in.
Yeah.
This is the resolution. It's worse than it is in VH because they don't boost it. But this little bump over here would be too narrow. Even if you collect a few bins there, it's not really significant signal. It would show up here and it does not. It, maybe it's that little blip there, but it's well within one signal. Okay, so, nothing there. So combine everything together, and so our latest sensitivity plot as of November in the HCP conference. So now the black is everything together. The ZZ has crossed the 5 sigma, crossed the Rubicon. 5 sigma. So we now have, I think it's true at Atlas too, there's a single channel now that has greater than 5 sigma expected, which is what I was waiting to see. WW is not far behind. Gamma Gamma is because it wasn't updated. But just a personal point here, I put all of my money 5 years ago on 115 GeV Higgs, and that's why I worked on BB bar. And I'd just like to point out that is the best mode at 115. So if God had been more generous, I would have hit the jackpot. Anyway. All right, so then you put all the data in, you get the p-values out, and gamma gamma is greater than 4 still. It's the IHOP result. ZZ is above 4 now. So you combine everything together, you get almost 7, so the signal didn't go away. WW is almost everywhere above 3 sigma. Tau-tau is coming up. It was down. Now it's coming up. BB has just been coming up gradually the whole time. The TT bar H, so it is above 2 sigma in VH. You can see it's below 2 sigma here, and that's because the TTH pulls it down a little bit. So that's the difference there. Okay, Michaela showed this spot. So this is by a sort of production channel, also separated by decay. So BB bar is on the top. You can see the TTH, if you fix it at 0, which we do, no comment on that, then you get, it's a negative and it's a large error bar. It looks like a smaller error bar because we clip it at 0. But the TTH is negative and the H to BB with VH is, as you saw, 1.3. Then in the other channels, you can compare all of the separate production modes, the so-called tags. And then if you integrate all the production channels and just look at the decay, you get this plot that everybody has seen. So right now, yeah, go ahead.
So I raised this in private conversations, but let's talk about this publicly.
Sure.
If you look at the CMS tau-tau paper, they have a much more detailed fit of the tau-tau signal, and then they add everything up, and their final result is 0.7 plus or minus 0.7, which is not what's plotted there.
Here it is.
Yeah, that's not 0.7 plus or minus 0.7.
That's correct. This includes, as far as I know, everything. So it's also the VH. And so I don't know if this is a question of
BBF. Two things. One is that it includes the VH tau-tau. And actually, the tau-tau paper has a VH. The second thing is that in the standalone paper, they used bin by bin and sentence this, and that could not be afforded in the combination. So there's a small difference in one model and the other, but the two models are consistent with less than half a sigma.
But by the paper, you mean the HCP conference?
The conference.
You're talking about the conference paper?
Right.
Not the July paper.
Right, but I mean, that it might be true that the two numbers are statistically significant, but it's psychologically, that's a much, when the other paper has 0.7 plus or minus 0.7, that means that it's touching at 1 sigma 0. And this, you know, you look at this and you say, my God, this NMO is doing great. It's not going to be 0. Psychologically, they're very different results.
Well, that's a different statement, but I think because I still see this as fully consistent with 0. The thing that you're pointing out is it jumps from 0.7 to 0.9. Now, if I understand correctly, this effect can only be the difference between the tau-tau only combination and the combination with all of the other channels, but that means the nuisance parameters have pulled tau-tau by 0.2. I didn't get the other part that you said there was a difference.
Yes, no, there is a difference in the model. I think that this was very quickly discussed somewhere in one of the conference reports, that the model that is used for the standalone tau-tau result has 100 nuisances due to bin by bin uncertainties. Those were removed in the computer.
Okay, got it.
So the difference in the model. And
yeah, okay. Yeah. That's a technical point. So this is inside baseball, but you know, in these plots where we try to extract, you can take this. The question here is whether you put in the statistical uncertainty on the background templates correlated across all bins so that everybody goes up and down by square root n, or you allow each bin to fluctuate separately. And when you have only very little Monte Carlo like we have, both at CMS and Atlas, this matters. This question matters, whether you let it go up and down altogether or you let each bin vary separately. By the way, neither one of those is correct, because even bin-by-bin variation is not. We have additional information constraints on the shape that if you let everything just go crazy bin-by-bin, you would get shapes that you know are less likely than what you expect. So that's the issue, and wow, I have to admit I didn't see that yet, that it moved tau-tau by 0.2.
They were asked to check the significance, and the significance didn't change, but the signal strength moved. No.
Okay.
So, several questions. The HDBB is a combination of the VH and TTH.
Yes.
And once again, what is the TTH central values of target?
Where is it? Here. Oh, no, you can't see. There was another plot. You can see it's minus 0.8, I think. I think it's minus 0.8 plus or minus 1 point something. It cuts off at 0 because of this procedure that was agreed at the LHC, which you don't let mu go less than 0. Like I said, don't get me started on that. So it's clipped. It, that's why we don't plot it, the negative. But if you do, it's on another plot. Hold on. Yeah, it's on this one. Here you go. Okay, so if you now you can see it. When Michele showed you, you couldn't see the BB bar. So this is the signal strength for QQH plus VH, but since we don't have BBF for BB bar, it's just VH. And on the horizontal axis, it's GGH plus TTH, but we don't have gluon fusion for BB bar. So this is perfect for BB bar. This is VH versus TTH. And they're not correlated, and you can see the error is much better for VH, as you know, you see. And then the central value is minus 0.8 or so, and the error is huge. So, wow.
I guess the left-hand plot also makes sense.
Yeah, so we should really, I should have scrounged around and found the one that lets it go negative. I think it's much more useful to see that rather than see the clip one. Some people don't like to see negative cross-sections. For me, it has never bothered me.
Because they say that in the combination, you can describe the deficits better if you allow it to be negative.
It's probably, yeah, the fit's more stable. Yeah. The fit is more stable, sure. So you saw this. I think that all the points have been made. The more, other than the BB bar one comparing VH and TTH, the interesting one is the slope here, which just comes from the expected ratio of these two production cross-sections. And then integrating out the decay and looking at the production, you see this combination where TTH is just one channel. So far, we're working on the other channels. All right, you've probably seen these before. Yeah.
Can you just comment on, the negative mu's have a simple physical interpretation. So why are they being fired away in this way?
No, we can use negative mu's in the combination. It's just a matter of plotting. So.
Well, it's just a matter of plotting. There's nothing to it.
If it's 0, it has to be negative half the time. And we're searching for something, so I think it's we should have decided that. But again, that decision was made 2 years ago, and we're stuck with it. Consistency is better than correctness in this case. Famous. All right, anyway, yeah, it doesn't affect the final result. You still integrate above, you integrate the limit in the physical region, and you get, you know, Feldman-Cousin style.
Sorry, just so I understand. So yeah. The combined fits are using just the positive region for the negative fits?
Well, we can do it both ways, as you see. And the answer is that the limit doesn't change. I mean, the upper limit on the cross section that's estimated comes out, it takes into account this negative central value. So, let's see. Yeah, okay, that's all I wanted to say there. So the couplings now, the fermion couplings versus the vector boson couplings, you've probably seen this plot unfolded now also to show that the other non-standard solution. I like this plot because you can see each channel and its effect in this plane, which just comes from the different production channel and the different decay channel. The biggest constraint here comes from the gamma. This one's here. Oh, that's the total, sorry. The ZZ is here. Gamma gamma is here. It has this slope because it has the TT bar in the initial state. The tau versus, so we on Tukey, we have all of these plots of anything versus anything else. And so you can look at the tau versus bottom couplings, and they're not correlated, and because the production channels are mostly separate. And the tau is consistent at 1.5 sigma, consistent with zero, so it stretches all the way down there. And the bottom is about 2 sigma, so getting a little bit from away from zero, but fully consistent with the standard model expectation. Okay, then the mass, you saw most of this, at least for ZZ, you saw it, and so now putting gamma gamma and ZZ on the same plot, you can see what everybody knows. Gamma gamma prefers a slightly lower mass, ZZ slightly higher, but they're perfectly consistent with each other, and in the 2D space also consistent. So the average of the two channels is 125.8, and the conserved use is 0.4. So, as Michaela said, in the ZZ channel, the systematic is a little bit less, and so there you just, more data will help. Eventually, I think maybe you could comment, the scaling from the Z peak to the Higgs probably sets the ultimate uncertainty on systematic on the mass. We will always have to do that extrapolation. So. All right, you saw this too. This is pseudoscalar versus scalar, and so we are inconsistent with the pseudoscalar hypothesis at the level of 2.4 sigma. And he showed the 0 versus 2. Okay, so, I'll just end with two slides on the future projections. So for the B channel, the BB bar channel, I showed this plot at the workshop in Pittsburgh a couple months ago. That was before HCP. And I didn't have this point there, and this yellow band was, in terms of the exclusion, the improvement we could get with 10 to 30% improvement on the analysis, that's what we would get, and so we got at the high end of that band. So we got about 10% improvement, actually, realized. Then, as a function of luminosity, again, on the other side, the significance, our goal right now is to achieve 3 sigma with the current data set. That is the full 2011 plus 2012 data set. The data itself will give us 20%. We need to get another 20, 25% from the analysis itself. And so we need another band like this relative to the HCP analysis where we get 20% on top, and that's what we're working on right now. But just from this curve, we would have expected to hit 3 sigma at about 27 inverse femtobarns from the iChip analysis, a little bit better than that at, say, 20 inverse femtobarns with the HCP analysis. And that's right where we're at. We're at about 20-something in response to Barnes. So we have to improve a little bit to get the 3 sigma mark. But we're in the ballpark, which is good.
By the way, how much luminosity did you get by the shutdown?
We got 21 at 8 TeV, so adding 5 is 26. 25 to 26. We might not be able to use all of the 21.
Why?
Just how many detectors are on and functioning.
So
maybe
Michaelis
knows.
Meaning another 8 to 9 from HCP?
So another 8, It's another 8 on top of 17, so it's about 40%. Yeah, that's where I get the 20%.
Right. That was that 7 after data quality.
Okay, but you had one more than us at HCP, so we're going to end up with the same amount.
You're saying eight before data quality.
Before.
Still have one more.
I don't know, do you know what the latest is? It was released 2 days ago. Anyway, these days, one inverse comes to bar and comes, you know, it's like nickels and dimes. The main thing is, can we improve the analysis another 20%? You know, you see what we, I didn't toot the horn here. 2011 analysis 7 TeV, okay, if you projected that at iCheck, we would have gotten here, and we got that. It's a factor of 2 improvement, which means effectively 4 times more data, when we only got, you know, that much more data. So that was a big jump, and then
we got 8.
Yeah, so we'll end up with 25. That's CMS. And then we wanted to get another 30% on top of that, but we only got about 10. But these kind of curves, you've seen these in the past. I mean, every experiment has shown that they do better than square root L, one over square root L. So that will continue in the future. Speaking of the future, the projections at sort of 300 inverse Gunther Barnes, I didn't show the high luminosity ones, sort of more on the imaginary axis. But at least 300, I think you can believe these projections. Maybe we'll talk about it later. I didn't see Michael yet. But here we start on the real axis, all of the results I just showed, the real results. And then you project somehow, right? And if you just take the uncertainties we have now, same systematic uncertainties, experiment and theory as now, you don't assume any improvement, you get the red here. The green is what we had at iCheck. And this is the coupling, sorry, the signal strength. So one is standard model and the error bar shows you the uncertainty. So the red is if we just add data and we don't get any smarter. And then the black is if you just had, the smartest theorist you could ever get. And so there are no theory uncertainties. And that would be the black. So in some modes it helps, but in others, this is coming from the gluon fusion, I assume, that process, which still has a fairly large uncertainty. But you're sort of around 10 to 20%, depending on.
How long does it take to get 300 inverse septum barns when they turn on again if it works?
It's above 10 to 34 luminosity, so it should take less than 2 years. But keep in mind.
No,
I think it's 3 or 4.
No.
3 or 4?
Yeah, 50 inverse centaur is the first 2. They're not going to turn on at 10 to 30.
That's true, yeah, they're not turning on at 10. That's true. Before 2020.
They ended up at 7 times 10 to 33.
Yes, right. A little bit above that.
Now we're going to go to 25 nanoseconds.
Right.
Yeah. Got to take 2 steps backwards for everyone.
Right. Okay. So then, if for the couplings, if we played a different game, you could take the current uncertainties, that's the green there, so anywhere between 5% and 15% uncertainty, depending on the particle. And then if you assume that theorists get 2 times smarter by 300 inverse Gunther Barnes, then you can get the red, also scaling the luminosity by, scaling the experimental uncertainties by luminosity. So it's assuming that all of the systematic uncertainties from the experiment are statistical in nature and will just go down like root L, and that we get improvements on the theory uncertainties by a factor of 2. I don't know, do you have to be 4 times smarter or 2 times smarter to get a factor of 2 improvement in the theory? I don't know. Question?
Push blue haze.
What's that?
Hard. It's really hard to push the theory.
Well, I think gluon fusion is the one that would help the most, right? So I don't know what the prospects are there.
Do you have estimates for TTHiggs? How long do you do with that?
I think for TT Higgs, it's going to depend critically on what we assume about TTPD and whether we can measure it separately. So hard to say. We don't have projections for that. You can. These are all just scaling, so you can just take it and scale like this with these caveats, with these instructions, if you like. So the red here, you can just take the current result and scale it by. That's 5 inverse Gunther Barnes, so you can scale it by a factor, square root of that, so factor 3 or 4. Okay, so, less actually. You can take any channel and play this game, really. You don't need to actually run, there is no simulation run here, in fact. Okay, so, that's it. Any other questions on this?
Just so I understand, so the first plot is just a naive sort of scaling.
Yeah, here. Right.
But this other plot at the bottom, what exactly did you do to make that projection?
Right. So it's the same kind of naive scaling, it's just different assumptions. So you're doing a combination type fit.
Yeah.
Where you have all the channels in and you've scaled them all, right? So we have so-called data cards, right, which have all the numbers in them. So it's trivial to scale by luminosity and play this game.
Yes.
So you just run the same combination fit, assuming a different a different luminosity, and so different expected signal background and uncertainties. And then you, for the systematics, you play two different games. One is just keeping them the same, and the other is assuming they scale by luminosity, and then the theory goes down by a certain amount. And then you just rerun the fit, and you get the new uncertainty.
But it's a global fit of all these parameters at the same time?
Yeah.
And as a prior, you're putting in like this upper limit on the vector coupling? Vector. Are you putting that upper limit of like roughly one? Sometimes that's done.
You mean are there additional constraints?
Yeah.
That I'm not sure about, but I would guess no. I don't know if Michaelis knows. Yeah, I don't know exactly the answer. I think the answer is we just do the fit without any additional.
So you just project forward your uncertainties, and then you're just doing a multi-dimensional fit.
Keeping the central values too, I believe. So
the central values to correct
that. You know, the fact that gamma, I think.
I thought that you keep it like this kind of model.
Because I think we are doing frequencies. I think this is just expected. Not taking into account.
Well, that's not right. Okay, nothing's right. But the observed changes in all the nuisance parameters change with the fit. So if you use the observed, you use the expected, or if you use the expected central value and the observed uncertainty, not consistent. So. You know, there's a lot of hand waving that goes into this.
Yeah, I just want to have a rough idea of what's being
done. Yeah, but in terms of bounds, I don't know if we put in theoretical bounds on what we expect. Like what we're saying.
So roughly speaking, I mean, if I want to think about comparing with some future plus and minus collider, you're basically saying that if we could really improve to the red, we can get at the LHC eventually hope for a BB bar. Coupling measurement below 10%.
Yeah, that's what this is. That's a correct interpretation of this block.
Okay.
If I may add something that one of the GTEs and question that you had, as you may have followed also in our working group for the LHC cross-sectional working group, the issue right now is the background. And it's not that the calculations do not exist, I mean, because actually what you really need is mainly the ratio of TT bar to B bar to TT bar plus J. And both exist, including the first order of PCB correction. The real issue is just to make them available in such a way that they can be used.
Right.
And that's what the whole point is right now, and what people are working on, right? So there is a lot of work going into that right now. And we are not really worrying about the signal. The signal is easy for them. And the system has been interfaced with animal on the color. The background is not. And it's much more difficult to do. But the calculations exist. So they're there.
It's
not that they're just not from scratch.
Right?
It's just an interface with an
unknown technology. Yeah, the same is true for VH. So it's the background is more important than the signal. I mean, there is this question about the signal PT spectrum, but the background is more important. All right. Anything else here? Just the conclusions then. So we still, as Michaelis said, we still have a particle. We're trying to figure out the mass. There used to be only two options. Now there might be three options. I don't know. The angular distribution is preferring a scalar. The fermions are now coming up, as we see. There is no sign of any other Higgs objects yet. We're searching. We hope to have input on where the best places to search would be. And then the future projections we just discussed. So that's it.